Interludes. Venli, Mem, Sheeler. Interlude 7. Envoy. Odium's grand purpose for Venli meant turning her into a showpiece. "Then the humans waged a war of extermination against us," she told the assembled crowd. "My sister tried to negotiate, to explain that we had no blame for the assassination of their king. They would not listen. They saw us only as slaves to be dominated." The wagon upon which she stood wasn't a particularly inspiring dais, but it was better than the pile of boxes she'd used in the last town. At least her new form, envoy form, was tall, the tallest she'd ever worn. It was a form of power, and brought strange abilities, primarily the ability to speak and understand all languages. That made it perfect for instructing the crowds of Alethi Parshmen. "They fought for years to exterminate us," she said to command. "They could not suffer slaves who could think, who could resist. They worked to crush us, lest we inspire a revolution." The people gathered around the wagon bore thick lines of marbling, of red and either black or white. Venley's own white and red was far more delicate, with intricate swirls. She continued, speaking triumphantly to the rhythm of command, telling these people, as she told many others, her story, at least the version of it that Odium had instructed her to tell. She told them she'd personally discovered new sprend to bond, creating a form that would summon the Everstorm. The story left out that Ulim had done much of the work, giving her the secrets of storm form. Odium obviously wanted to paint the listeners as a heroic group, with Venli their brave leader. The listeners were to be the foundation myth of his growing empire, the last of the old generation who had fought bravely against the Alethi, then sacrificed themselves to free their enslaved brothers and sisters. Hauntingly, the narrative said that Venli's people were now extinct, save herself. The former slaves listened, rapt by her narrative. She told it well, she should, given how often she'd related it these last weeks. She ended with the call to action, as specifically instructed. "My people have passed, joining the eternal songs of Roshar," she said. "The day now belongs to you. We had named ourselves listeners because of the songs we heard. These are your heritage. But you are not to merely listen, but sing. Adopt the rhythms of your ancestors and build a nation here. You must work, not for the slavers who once held your minds, but for the future, for your children, and for us, those who died that you might exist." They cheered to the rhythm of excitement. That was good to hear, even if it was an inferior rhythm. Venli heard something better now, new, powerful rhythms that accompanied forms of power. Yet, hearing those old rhythms awakened something in her, a memory. She put her hand to the pouch at her belt. "How like the Alethi these people act," she thought. She had found humans to be stern, angry, always walking about with their emotions worn openly, prisoners to what they felt. These former slaves were similar. Even their jokes were Alethi, often biting toward those to whom they were closest. At the conclusion of her speech, an unfamiliar voidspren ushered the people back to work. She'd learned there were three levels in the hierarchy of Odium's people. There were these common singers, who wore the ordinary forms Venli's people had used. Then there were those called regals, like herself, who were distinguished by forms of power, created by bonding one of several varieties of voidspren. At the top were the fused, though she had trouble placing spren like Ulim and others. They obviously outranked the common singers, but what of the regals? She saw no humans in this town. Those had been rounded up or chased off. She'd overheard some fused saying that human armies still fought in western Alethkar, but this eastern section was completely singer-controlled. Remarkable, considering how the humans greatly outnumbered the singers. The Alethi collapse was due in part to the Everstorm, in part to the arrival of the Fused, and in part to the fact that the Alethi had repeatedly conscripted eligible men for their wars. Venli settled down on the back of the cart, and a female singer brought her a cup of water, which she took gladly. Proclaiming yourself as the savior of an entire people was thirsty work. The singer woman lingered. She wore an Alethi dress, with the left hand covered up.
Is your story really true?
Of course it is, Venli said to conceit.
You doubt? No, of course not. It's hard to imagine. Parshmen fighting.
Call yourselves singers, not parshmen.
Yes, of course.
The female and held her hand to her face, as if embarrassed. Speak to the rhythms to express apology, Venli said. Use appreciation to thank someone for correction, or anxiety to highlight your frustration. Consolation if you are truly contrite.
Yes, brightness.
Oh, Esh and I, they have so far to go. The woman scampered away. That lopsided dress looked ridiculous. There was no reason to distinguish between the genders except in mate form. Humming to ridicule, Venli hopped down, then walked through the town, head high. The singers wore mostly work form or nimble form, though a few, like the femalen who had brought the water, wore scholar form, with long hair strands and angular features. She hummed to fury. Her people had spent generations struggling to discover new forms, and here these people were given a dozen different options? How could they value that gift without knowing the struggle? They gave Venli deference, bowing like humans as she approached the town's mansion. She had to admit there was something very satisfying about that.
What are you so smug about?
Rhine demanded to destruction when Venli stepped inside. The tall Fused waited by the window, hovering, as always, a few feet off the ground, his cloak hanging down and resting on the floor. Venli's sense of authority evaporated.
I can't help but feel as if I'm among babes here.
If they are babes, you are a toddler.
A second Fused sat on the floor amid the chairs. That one never spoke. Venli didn't know the femalen's name and found her constant grin and unblinking eyes upsetting. Venli joined Rhine by the window, looking out at the singers who populated the village, working the land, farming. Their lives might not have changed much, but they had their songs back. That meant everything.
We should bring them human slaves, ancient one, Venli said to subservience. I fear that there is too much land here. If you really want these villages to supply your armies, they'll need more workers.
Rhine glanced at her. She'd found that if she spoke to him respectfully, and if she spoke in the ancient tongue, her words were less likely to be dismissed.
There are those among us who agree with you, child, Rhine said.
You do not?
No. We will need to watch the humans constantly. At any moment, any of them could manifest powers from the enemy. We killed him, and yet he fights on through his surge binders.
Surge binders.
Foolishly, the old songs spoke highly of them.
How can they bind Spren, ancient one?
She asked a subservience.
Humans don't, you know...
So timid, he said to ridicule. Why is mentioning gem hearts so difficult?
They are sacred and personal.
Listener gem hearts were not gaudy or ostentatious, like those of great shells. Clouded white, almost the color of bone, they were beautiful, intimate things.
They're a part of you, Rhine said. The dead body's taboo, the refusal to talk of gem hearts. You're as bad as those out there walking around with one hand covered.
What? That was unfair.
She attuned fury.
It shocked us when it first happened, Rhine eventually said. Humans don't have gem hearts. How could they bond Spren? It was unnatural. Yet somehow their bond was more powerful than ours. I always said the same thing, and believe it even more strongly now. We must exterminate them. Our people will never be safe on this world as long as the humans exist.
Venli felt her mouth grow dry. Distantly, she heard a rhythm. The rhythm of the lost? An inferior one. It was gone in a moment.
Rhine hummed to conceit, then turned and barked a command to the crazy fused. She scrambled to her feet and loped after him as he floated out the door. He was probably going to confer with the town's Spren. He'd give orders and warnings, which he usually only did right before they left one town for another. Despite having unpacked her things, working under the assumption she'd be here for the night, now Venli suspected they would soon be moving on. She went to her room on the second floor of the mansion. As usual, the luxury of these buildings astounded her. Soft beds you felt you would sink into, fine woodworking, blown glass vases, and crystal sconces on the walls for holding spheres. She'd always hated the Alethi, who had acted like they were benevolent parents encountering wild children to be educated. They had pointedly ignored the culture and advancements of Venli's people, eyeing only the hunting grounds of the Great Shells that they, because of translation errors, decided must be the listener's gods. Venli felt at the beautiful swirls in the glass of a wall sconce. How had they colored some of it white, but not all of it? Whenever she encountered things like this, she had to remind herself forcefully that the Alethi being technologically superior did not make them culturally superior. They'd simply had access to more resources. Now that the singers had access to art form, they would be able to create works like this too. But still, it was so beautiful. Could they really exterminate the people who had created such beautiful and delicate swirls in the glass? The decorations reminded her of her own pattern of marbling. The pouch at her waist started vibrating. She wore a listener's leather skirt below a tight shirt, topped with a looser overshirt. Part of Venli's place was to show the singers that someone like them, not some distant, fearsome creature from the past, had brought the storms and freed the singers. Her eyes lingered on the sconce, and then she dumped out her pouch on the room's stumpweight desk. Spheres bounced free, along with a larger number of uncut gemstones, which her people had used instead. The little Spren rose from where it had been hiding among the light. It looked like a comet when it moved, though sitting still as it did now, it only glowed like a spark.
"Are you one of them?" she asked softly. "The Spren that move in the sky some nights?"
It pulsed, sending off a ring of light that dissipated like glowing smoke. Then it began zipping through the room, looking at things.
"The room isn't any different from the last one you looked at," she said to amusement.
The Spren zipped to the wall sconce where it let off a pulse in awe, then moved to the identical one on the opposite side of the door. Venli moved to gather her clothing and writings from the drawers in the dresser.
"I don't know why you stay with me. It can't be comfortable in that bag."
The Spren zipped past her, looking in the drawer that she'd opened.
"It's a drawer," she said.
The Spren peeked out, then pulsed in a quick blinking succession.
"That's curiosity," she thought,
recognizing the rhythm. She hummed it to herself as she packed her things, then hesitated. Curiosity was an old rhythm, like amusement, which she'd attuned moments ago. She could hear the normal rhythms again. She looked at the little Spren.
"Is this your doing?" she demanded to irritation. It shrank, but pulsed to resolve. What are you hoping to accomplish? Your kind betrayed us. Go find a human to bother.
It shrank further, then pulsed to resolve again. Bother.
Down below, the door slammed open. Rhine was back already.
In the pouch, she hissed a command. Quickly.